Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial.
And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Andrew Horowitz here for episode number 120. Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate your ears and your listening and your spending some time with me. You know, we spend, 35, 40, 50, 60 minutes together on a weekly basis. And I got to tell you something, it does a lot for me because it really helps me to during the weekend time and the end of the week, kind of clear up what happened during the week, spend some time reviewing, researching. You know, one of my favorite things to do, by the way, is on Saturday morning comes and I get the weekend edition of the Investor's Business Daily. This is not a commercial, by the way, but I encourage you, if you haven't read it, they have a lot of small caps in there and they have a lot of, stocks in there that you may not really consider as the stocks you look at usually. But much of the writing there is, I feel at least, not as slanted as the mainstream media is. And I really like that. I think that it's really refreshing to see a different view. Not maybe so different, but just clean and clear and crisp. Now, one of the things I really like to do is go through the IBD 100 on a weekly basis because that's some good research. William O'Neill uses a great set of disciplines in order to find out what stocks are meeting, their criteria. Many of them are very volatile, so I'll just tell you right now, the IBD 100 usually is a pretty volatile group, but you can find a few diamonds in the rough in there, and if you see what they're talking about, usually you see a decent pop the next week or so when they really highlight those, particularly in a bullish environment. But the news in that particular paper gives you a great summary of the week that was and really a prelude to what's going to happen. So I thought what we'd do today is more of a newsy show. I thought we'd spend a little time today talking about what happened. It's the end of the month, what's going on. Kind of, a lot of people scratching their head in July saying, wait a minute, July looked really awful and earnings were questionable in the beginning. And yeah, we saw that great Goldman Sachs number. Intel just was wow in terms of just what was going on. Cash for clunkers. Let's talk about some of this and kind of clarify this and try to get our hands around what's going on. So I pulled, we're also going to talk about oil. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about the earnings this month. We're going to talk about all this. But what I thought I would do is I pulled some of the important news items of the week. And I thought maybe some of this we would talk about this and, just talk a little bit about what happened. So let's start with that. There's a story that's going around. One of the important portfolio managers, Ackerman, he is talking about how the next wave of crisis, and again, this is not a bad or good news. This is just what's going on. I'm going to tell you what's going on. Is the next wave of the crisis. So in other words, we had this situation with loans. We all know about that, the subprime mess that happened. Now we have the alt A's, the A's, and we're not going to even talk about the commercial markets. But, we have this situation where we have loans are going bad for good borrowers. In other words, the borrowers that had the credit, they weren't the subprime, they weren't the problem. Yeah, they may have done a real tight loan to value on their homes. And even if they didn't, even if they had a 10% or 15%, even a 20% corridor, what's happened? Well, housing prices dropping 30 or 40% in some areas, maybe even 50 in some areas like here in sunny Florida, Texas maybe, not as much in Texas, California definitely, Michigan. That is causing a big problem. People don't want to keep paying on a house that they have essentially, no equity in. And they do the mailbox drop. You know what that is, the mailbox drop, right? That's when they basically one day look back and say, This isn't worth it. They take the keys, they put it in the mailbox, and they say, sayonara. But that's not a good thing, because obviously they get into the foreclosure situation, maybe even the short sale. Like 100 different things can happen then. But I think that, you know, generally, you know, when we look at the next wave of crisis, the question is going to be, what is going to be the result? What is going to be kind of the fallout from this? Because we saw so many crises this time. You know, we saw the AIG issue, clearly a major crisis. We saw let's think about the automobile manufacturing crisis. Two companies went into bankruptcy. Did that even affect us one bit in terms of investors? No, it didn't. In fact, Ford is doing great. Closed at about $8 this week. Cash for Clunkers didn't hurt that either. We'll talk about that in a second. Major story on Cash for Clunkers. But what's happening is that it seems that we have implicit government backing. And I don't know. It seems to me that that kind of is a good thing right now. The spirits of people are up. Yeah, consumer confidence was down last week. We're going to talk about the economic numbers in a second. And we saw the reaction of people, investors, that there's kind of this, I don't know, right now at least, this underlying floor. You know, there's some kind of protection. 875 was a big number. 968 now is a big number on the S&P 500. There's a lot of speculation saying we're going to get to 1100. Goldman Sachs this week came out with an announcement. They're projecting 1060. Right after that, they came out with a upgrade of GE, of course, which drove GE up a little bit. You know, and that obviously drove the markets up because GE is a big part of that. And when Goldman Sachs is putting some muscle behind a company like GE, that drives the markets up. Yet we saw things like McDonald's come down with some horrible numbers. But on the other hand, we saw some good numbers as well throughout the week. So it's interesting, this dichotomy that we have going on. We have this implicit guarantee by the government on one hand. And on the other hand, we have the economics. Many of them are starting to look better. Many of them are starting to look worse. The earnings are being taken as positive, even though we see revenues really being in terrible shortfall. We see the unemployment number tick up to, I think it was 584 on initial claims this week. We only expect about 577. And the question is, where is that going? We hope that was going to move down. That particular number was taken very well. Actually, the continuing claims dropped down dramatically. But realize something, that we're seeing a fall off for people that don't qualify for the unemployment insurance anymore. That's where the continuing claims are falling off. I don't necessarily think that's a good thing. I mean, it seems to me that if people are no longer on the unemployment insurance and getting unemployment, you know, hopefully they're going back to work. But that's going to be seen in the unemployment rate. And when we see initial claims, you know, going up, that probably is a little bit of an indicator that people aren't hiring just yet. That makes sense, doesn't it? I think it makes sense. Let's see what else we got. We had a couple of things. Cash for Clunkers. Wow. I mean, 4 days to go through $1 billion. Now, there's a couple of things I don't understand about this, because it seems that they really don't know how many cars they sold. That's really kind of interesting. They think that they hit their limit. And they want to make sure that they make sure that anybody that got a contract with a Cash for Clunkers, $4,500 to $5,500, or whatever the number they had on their particular car, that they would get paid. But you know what? It's only been authorized for $1 billion. That's all. Now, originally, it was about $4 billion, I believe. That was the allocation that was going into Cash for Clunkers. It was cut back, though. Now, all of a sudden, there's some chatter that we're going back. They're looking for another $2 billion for Cash for Clunkers because it was one of the most successful deals. They say it's the ultimate stimulus package. It's directly, you know, helping the consumer. Now, the problem is, I'm going to be honest with you, is this a stimulus package? Yes, for the automobile industry, no question. People still have to come up with money to spend on this. Now, stimulus sometimes is one of two things, right? You could stimulate, let's say, a project where you stimulate the project, people do some work, and they get paid, they put money in their pocket, they could buy things. Clearly, that's great, okay? They can pay for the current expenses, they don't have to increase debt, they can pay for their homes, whatever it is, and make it a little bit easier on them. That's good stimulus. The stimulus also in this way that stimulates the buying of something. But clearly what happens here is that the people that are handing in the clunkers that are going to be destroyed, what's going to happen there? Well, they're going to have to spend more money. They're going to have to put money. Now, that's good, but where's the stimulus back to them for the future? What if they don't have a job? What if? What if they are just making ends meet now when they're going to buy a car and they're going to take out another loan and they're going to have to pay it off over 4 or 5 years? Now, maybe they're paying cash for it. And many of the people that seem to have wanted this and have gone to do the Cash for Clunkers said they wouldn't have bought a home. Excuse me, wouldn't have, clearly, it's, as a Freudian slip if I ever heard one, okay? Or not a Freudian slip, but a some kind of a slip there. Wouldn't buy a home. We know about that, what's going on there, too. They wouldn't buy a car. They wouldn't buy a car if it wasn't for the cash for clunkers, the great discount. I saw a commercial. Did you see this? I saw a commercial that showed that between the rebates and the cash for clunkers, the car you could buy was about $4,500. And now, I don't know what car you can buy with that kind of, you know, $4,500. It wasn't $4,500 down either. It was $4,500. That's amazing. That's a very cheap car, isn't it? That's affordable. I mean, generally speaking, it's affordable. I think that, you know, when you look at the Cash for Clunkers deal and the success of it, it's been successful around the world. It's definitely helped the automobile industry, which then helps manufacturing. That's where the stimulus comes in, by the way. The stimulus comes in when it passes down to the manufacturing, the steel manufacturers, the parts companies, et cetera. That's why we have a few of those in our portfolio. We have a company called Copart, and we also have a couple of related companies, but Copart and LQKX. I always get that backwards. LQKX. And basically, these companies are in the scrap slash secondhand car part distribution and sales and all that. We like that because, you know, it is required, it is an absolute requirement that you have, in the cash for clunkers, this is, you have to disable and pretty much scrap the car. Now, we own some steel companies and we kind of questioned whether it was a good idea. The volatility was pretty hot on those. But when you look at the cash for clunker situation, I mean, that's what's pushing, or what pushed AutoNation, that's what pushed Ford today up dramatic, or the other day, today, I mean, it was this week, pushed Ford up dramatically when they saw how successful the plan was. And the plan is successful. The question, though, is, are we going to go and another $2 billion in the hole in this? Maybe that was a plan all along. There's a lot of confusion about it. There's a lot of questions about it. But clearly, you know, the offer is going to be questionable after going through $1 billion for the future 4 or 5 days. Interesting. I think really almost fascinating. The other thing that I want to talk about, there's a few different things on my list here. The Senate and the House, I should say the House, recently passed a limitation on bank and financial firms' bonuses. Did you see this? The Senate now and Obama have some real skepticism about this. And you know, President Obama is probably going to, veto a bill that has a requirement, a mandatory requirement. This all came on the heels of what we saw with Goldman, and especially last week with Citi. Did you see what happened with Citi? How much bonuses they paid out in 2008? Billions of dollars in bonuses. I mean, yes, the people deserve what they make. But, you know, on the heels of the trader in London, who's going to make, you know, a few hundred million dollars because of his profiting on oil trading, that's great. Now, I don't want to get into the whole discussion about oil trading, whether he did the right thing or the wrong thing. I don't really care. You know, if he's making a lot of money for the company, he should probably be paid a reasonable amount. I have no problem with that. But where does it end? In other words, at what level do you care how much risk you take to make the money? So I think that they're barking up the wrong tree a little bit here, and I don't think it's ever going to pass. We're seeing a lot of scrutiny already from the Senate and from the president and his administration. But I think that when you look at this, it's right now a very, you know, politically correct thing to talk about limiting the bonuses. You know, look at all these people, the fat cat that broke the society, broke our economy, broke our country, broke the world, and they're still getting paid more money than they've ever paid. This year, 2009, is slated to be the best year for bonuses ever. That's kind of weird. I mean, that's kind of interesting. I'm all for capitalism, and I think that we should pay people. I just think the concept is a little bit, you know, disheartening when you see what goes on. Now, the other thing that's interesting about this week, we saw GDP this week, right? Well, we saw a couple things this week. Again, we saw the numbers tick up a little bit in terms of the unemployment, or not the employment, but the initial claims. That was interesting. But let me tell you some things that are good, some things that are bad, okay? Number one, here we go. I got all the economics for the week right here in front of me. So the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index actually ticked up ever so slightly. In other words, we're not seeing massive declines like we saw. The survey thought we'd see about a negative 17.9%. The actual is about 17% reduction year over year on the 20 area composite. That's good, I guess. I mean, if we're talking about the second derivative of less worse, I guess that's good. The fact of the matter is, but prior was about 18.1, and this one was 17.06. Everybody's happy, happy. Consumer confidence, though, came in definitely lower. Last month it was about 49.3, and this time it was 46.6. Consumer confidence is clearly starting to get a little bit, you know, raggedy and concerned with all the job losses. I told you about the Rasmussen poll recently that President Obama is dropping down to his lowest rating ever as he's pushing for this health care plan, which looks like it may be on the back burner now. But consumer confidence is starting to kind of get a little questionable. We did see some good things. We saw not as important, but the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index went to 14 from prior of 6. That's good. The ABC consumer confidence, again, was about flat. Mortgage applications. Listen to this. The MEA mortgage application index that was released shows that the prior was about 2.8% more on a period-over-period basis, negative 6.3. Durable goods. Now, there was some discussion about durable goods being really good this week and a surprise. I'm going to argue with that. I'm sorry. Well, let's look at the facts here, just the facts. When it's good, it's good. We call it as it is. Prior, the durable goods order was 1.8, revised down to 1.3. You know, the famous revisions down that we've seen through the whole situation here, it keeps on being revised down and down. Usually when it's revised down, the next time you see it, it's a little bit better than it should be because it's just a mathematical equation, right? So durable goods, this time the actual was a negative 2.5%. That's a big drop. That was a really big drop. Survey thought we'd only see about a negative 0.6% drop. But if you take out the transportation, we were actually up a little bit, or it was about maybe about the same, but revised down again, and we were at 1.1. Now, the Fed Beige Book came out this week, and there's been a lot of talk about that. You know, what's happening in the various Fed regions? And basically, they said, for the most part, maybe about 50-50, there's been less worse. In other words, contraction is starting to slow down and they stabilize, but some are still seeing a lot of problems and pain. And then we had initial claims come out. Went again, 584 versus 575, which is up from 554 last time. Continuing claims, what I talked about a moment ago, it dropped down from before the previous period was 6.22 million to 6.197 million. The trend has clearly been beneficial. The survey thought it would be 6.3 million, but the trend has been down on continuing claims. And again, that is a product of, you know, the fact that we've had initial claims that have been a little bit less, so you're starting out there, and the fact that maybe people are getting jobs, but generally people are getting, you know, they're on the back end of their employment benefits. Now, at the end of the week, we saw GDP, really much anticipated number. Survey thought we'd have about a negative 1.5% number. We saw about 1.5% quarter over quarter. Don't forget, last period, we were negative 5.5%, and we're getting into one of the, you know, really the longest period of recessions that we've ever seen. Technically, or at least the thumbnail kind of version of this, so the rule of thumb, is two periods back-to-back of negative GDP is a recession. Four periods used to be a depression, but, you know, let's leave that out because we're kind of there at this point. But the prior number that was released last month was a negative 5.5. So we thought that, you know, we really saw a bad number that fourth quarter. This is the first quarter we saw a negative 5.5. We thought we'd see about a negative 1.5. In fact, we thought there was possibility of actually seeing a positive number here. Well, the number actually came in of negative 1% growth, but there's a couple of caveats here I just want to throw at you. That was a really good number. That was great. That was fine. I mean, if you remember what happened was the market kind of initially went up, then it kind of came down. Why? Looking a little bit further into this number, number one, last quarter was revised down from negative 5.5 to a negative 6.4. No change over the two quarters. In other words, this is what's happening. We got this carrot in front of us right now that's saying things are going to get better, right? The second derivative, things aren't as worse. Things are going to get better in the future. Guess what? Things are going to get better in the future. Now, whether it's this quarter, next quarter, 5 quarters from now, I don't know right now. But you know, things are going to get better in the future. But here's what's happening. We're finding that each quarter we say, you know, next quarter is going to be good. And then what happens is when it's not as good, we say, oh, don't worry, next quarter will be good. So we can't keep this whole kind of, you know, thing going on that things are going to get better. Things are going to get better. Things are going to get better. What we found, though, inside of the numbers was that when we see the personal consumption number was knocked down, prior was a 1.4. That was great. Last quarter, they loved that number. The personal consumption number, wow, People are out there spending money. Things are really good. We really came up above. But you know what? It was revised down to 0.6. Over a 50% revision downward. Now, personal consumption this time was expected to be about a negative 0.5. It came in at negative 1.2%. Not a good number. Now, also, we looked at things like the employment cost index. Well, that was a little bit higher. In other words, it's people are potentially, the cost of employment is a little bit higher. This week, we saw that a little bit also. We saw the Chicago Purchasing Managers Index, which is kind of an important number. We look at this and kind of can gauge what's happening with the economy. Came in a little bit higher, which is good, higher than last period as well. Milwaukee's National Association Purchasing Manager came in lower. Now, what was also interesting is that this has been just released. I mean, this is hot off the press, okay? The weekly leading indicator from the ECRI, the Economic Cycle Research Institute, came out, and we saw a gigantic jump, just a gigantic jump in the leading indicators, okay? So here's what it is. This is really interesting. Clearly, this year, we went from about a negative 8 in July. We ticked down to about a negative 32, give or take, at the end of 2008, and now we're at about an 8. Now, on a monthly basis, that's a weekly basis, kind of this nice chart that looks like a big cup. Okay, if you think about a big cup, it goes from top left down and to top right. Now, on a monthly basis, we're seeing a major spike, just a dramatic spike. During this period of recession, we saw just a takedown from 07 till now, that the leading indicator index was just, it came down. It looked really horrible. Now, on a monthly basis, now we're looking at last month, of course, the growth was about 2%. The level is about 115. Before, it was about 111. And there was a negative 7% growth. That was prior period, okay, on a monthly basis. We're talking about May. So what's great is we're seeing some good things happening here. Now, what really I want to tell you about this particular environment, it seems to me, is that we may be entering into what we call, a W-shaped recovery. And let me tell you why we're thinking about that. One of the things you have to be aware of is that right now, and seriously, this is not just a line. Much of what's happening right now is based on some stimulus, and what we see right now is the unemployment rate driving up dramatically. Now, so many people talk about how the unemployment rate is a lagging indicator, and I agree with that, by the way. But unemployment itself is not a lagging indicator. In other words, we see every single week what the initial claims are. We see every single week what the continuing claims are. That is not a lagging indicator. Yes, it's 1 week back, but it's not like the unemployment rate that really is a 1 month back. It's not really like the non-farm payrolls, which is 1 month back. Yes, that clearly tells us what's going on then, and that's a lagging indicator. The lagging indicator discussion also talks about how usually, people aren't hired for some time after the recovery happens. Right now, we're still seeing very minimal signs of a U.S. recovery. There is some discussion about how China is seeing a recovery based on the $550 billion worth of money they sprinkled around there, clearly. There's some discussion about, like, Australia and New Zealand. Yeah, Australia, I don't think, has even entered a recession, actually. They're having some trouble with their markets there, but again, it's a different situation. Here, though, we're seeing the continuation of companies really needing to cut down on employees, cut expenses, and do whatever they can in order to make their earnings, in order to save money, in order to stay alive. Now, we know this because we look at what's happened in two things. Number one, we look at what happened with the earnings reports that are coming in, and we're also looking at what's happening with the growth trend of what's happening from the earnings reports. In other words, we're looking at not only the earnings reports, but we're also looking at what is happening from the revenue standpoint. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's start with the earnings for a minute, okay? Got this right here. Now, when I look at this, I'm looking at the earnings of the S&P 500. Good representation. I take that and I exclude out the financial industry. I just take it right out. I say, you know what? I don't want to deal with the financial industry and the financial companies. For the most part, we don't know what's going on. There's a lot of, games being played there and gamesmanship. When it comes to their earnings, the mark-to-market issue, FASB 157, we talk about that ad nauseum. But let's not talk about that. Let's look at all the other industries. So when we're looking at this, we're looking at earnings per share growth currently and in the future. Okay? So right now, what we're seeing that actually came in is a 31% earnings per share growth to the negative. In other words, on a 1 year over 1 year period, we're 31% lower. Now, what's really interesting about that is that, let me just go back and go back three quarters. Now, we're talking about, again, period over period. So we're talking about three quarters ago compared to that year in the previous year. Okay? 1 year previous for three quarters. We saw a 9.8% growth. Then the next quarter, two quarters ago, we saw a 19.47% reduction in that. Okay? EPS was going down. Then we had a 29.69%. And now we're at 31%. Next quarter, the estimate is for another 28% drop. Now, when you go back, we're looking at that compared to the first thing I talked about. Remember the quarter where we had the 9.83% gain? Well, we're comparing it to that. We're still seeing another 28% drop from then. But what's interesting is two quarters from now, we're still seeing a 1.76% loss. In other words, compared to that first quarter, we saw 19%. Now, there's a lot of numbers I'm throwing at you. Let me tell you what this means. Let me sum this up. We are not going to see any substantial growth at all in earnings for at least three quarters, according to estimates. Even though, yes, a lot of companies beat, et cetera, and we saw these great numbers come out, blah, blah, we are not going to see any significant EPS growth for at least three quarters. At least three quarters. The only one that has a chance to show some bright and shiny numbers is Basic Materials. But listen, before we go there, let's talk about this. Their numbers go like this. I'm just going to read it across for you. From three quarters ago, and again, which compares to the year before, 14% gain, 79% loss, 83% loss, 71% loss, 73% loss. And then two quarters from now, we're talking about 117% earnings gain, EPS gain. Now, hold on. Let's think about this. If we start out with 100 and we subtract out 80% loss, we're at 20. So now, somewhere in this whole range here, on average, we're talking about an 80% loss in earnings, 80% reduction in earnings from where we were. Now what we're saying is we're going to have 117% gain the next quarter. The following quarter will be 187% gain. So here we go. We start with 20. We have 117% gain. What happens? Well, we go from 20 and you go 117% from there, right? Well, you got to increase even more. It's not just 17% would just be 17% more. It's 117% more. So we're talking about, I don't know, from 20 to, let's say, 45, okay? So we're going to bring up our earnings at that point. Now we're talking about almost a 200% gain the following quarter, which means we're going to go from maybe 45 to about 90 or something like that. At that point, three quarters from now, we're still talking about a 10 to 15% reduction from where we were a long time ago. That's not a good number because the number is based on all these other losses. We're still three quarters out even with that amazing number. The worst quarter looks like oil and gas, looks absolutely abysmal for a long time. Industrials look horrendous. They're not even going to have any growth for at least four quarters according to the total estimates that are out there. Telecommunications, I don't see any green at all. The losses are less, but there's no green at all. Utilities have no green at all except for a 2% gain about three quarters out. And technology looks like, you know, they're going to start making some money. Their losses weren't as great. The worst sectors are oil and gas, basic materials, industrials. Consumer goods actually is looking a little better. The consumer goods sector actually looks like, you know what, next quarter may start growth. That's pretty amazing. Consumer services are not the same situation, but consumer goods is saying that, you know what, people need to buy things. People need to get things. And it depends on which particular subsector of that we're talking about, but consumer goods look good. Interesting because, you know, that would fly in the face of what we would think about when it comes to, you know, people not having money because they're unemployed. But nonetheless, now let's talk about revenues. Let's talk about, you know, when we're looking at the situation when we look at actually the trends over time, okay? What's interesting is that so far in the S&P 500, as of we speak right now, we've seen about a total of 267, about half the companies report, okay? Now, this is X financials. I don't want to talk about the financials. X financials. Again, we saw about a 31% reduction, in the growth of EPS over time. So the growth of that, okay. We saw 90 positive growth stories and about 174 negative growth stories. We saw about 10% overall surprise when it came to earnings. So if they thought there was going to be a a dollar earning, well, it was $1.10 on average, okay? Positive surprises are about 219, negative surprises about 40, 45. The biggest surprises came in the industrials. The worst situation entirely was, let's see, that would have to have been negative surprises. On average, it probably was healthcare. Maybe consumer services as well. But generally speaking, we didn't see a lot of, real problems there in terms of the surprises. 219 positive surprises, 44 negative surprises. Now, we can look at these one of two ways. We look at this in a way and say, wow, companies are doing really well. That's something we could definitely say that, yeah, well, things are doing much better than we anticipated. On the other hand, we can also say that analysts have done a really crappy job at estimating where these companies are going to come in. Now, what my fear is, back to the W, here's where we go. My fear is that analysts will start picking up their estimates very quickly because they don't want to be so far off in the future. They really want to try to get it right, quote unquote, want to try to get it right, end quote. And what's going to happen is that they're going to start raising their estimates. We've seen this happen over a lot of different companies. Now, what happened here was they were in such a bad shape. The companies were in such bad shape. The economy was such a bad shape that the analysts basically threw in the towel and said, you know what? For the most part, these companies are not making any money. We're just going to cut their EPS down dramatically, not taking into consideration maybe all the things they should have done, thinking about what a company will do in survival mode. Now, that's their job, of course, but they didn't do it very well, frankly. If we're seeing this many surprises, they didn't do a good job at understanding where that would be. Now, have they ever done a good job? That's a different question for a different show. We've actually answered that question once before, and I'll tell you, the answer. The answer is no. My concern is if they continue doing a poor job next quarter or potentially the quarter after, but next quarter, we can start seeing that we're getting a lot tighter to the earnings number, right? The analysts start upgrading. Companies will not be able to meet. Whether it's the third quarter or fourth quarter, I will tell you that we got that October, September, November situation brewing again. That would be the perfect storm. We think that, clearly that GPA, we're going to see growth in almost, in our economy. We're going to see a reduction of at least a slowing down of the job layoffs. But the question remains that if we see the reduction of job layoffs, what then? When do we start going the other side? When do people start, rehiring? We've heard very little, if no stories, about rehiring. We saw a few in the solar industry, which was interesting. First Solar said they're going to expand their factories in Malaysia. They're at capacity, even though the stock dropped a bit on Friday. That, they're going to continue building. They're doing really well. They have great opportunities. We saw the same with a few of the chip companies that we're going to expand a few thousand jobs again in Asia. We have really not seen a lot of job growth and even talk about that. Alcoa in that conference call, I think I told you about this, said even when demand returns, they're not going to do any significant hiring. And they had a 75% layoff rate. 75%. How the heck are they going to do what they do if recovery happens and demand comes on without those people? The other problem that I'm having here is oil and the cost of goods. We're already hearing that many companies are increasing their rates. Some of the steel companies, aluminum companies, many of the materials companies. But if you look what happened with oil, once again, we saw last week that the oil inventories came out. Oil tumbled because we had a gigantic build on oil. A gigantic build on oil, okay? And what was interesting was, we saw, I think it was the next day, oil start to tick up again. As a matter of fact, at the end of Friday, we were almost at $70 on the front month. The next month, we see $71 already. Oil was up about 3%. Now, meanwhile, even though natural gas actually had a drawdown on inventories, they were down. They started going the other direction. And crazy as it seems, gold was up. Gold is up when we saw a good GDP print. This is getting a little weird. Think about this. Isn't gold supposed to be a bit of a hedge in your portfolio? And isn't gold supposed to be a little bit of kind of, if things aren't going well, if we see things, Maybe it went up because we had a good GDP print this time. Maybe gold is actually going up because there is a concern about inflation right now. Maybe oil is going up for the same reason. Copper went up about 2.5% at the end of the week. But did you see corn, soybeans, sugar, wheat? Dramatic increases towards the end of the week. You got to wonder. The W. Do we have a dip, a little bit of a recovery, and another dip again because pricing will go up and people don't have the money to pay for it? Are we going to have a stimulus package again, number two or number three, if things don't work out? Are we going to actually see an increase in the cost of materials causing us to have inflation because the stimulus package is basically targeting that area? Cash for clunkers. You know, you got to build cars. You got to, that's steel and that's glass and that's all sorts of things. You know, are we going to see a resurgence of the inflation at this point, which will kind of drag us down a little bit? If that is the case, then what happens with the markets? Do we stifle innovation? Do we stifle, you know, opportunity if we allow for oil price to go up? And even though the CFTC discussed last week, there was a big hoop-de-doo on early in the week that, you know what, speculators were in the market. I heard this with my own ears. The CFTC, one of the lead representatives of CFTC said, last year during the summer, the data we found, you know, we weren't sure, but we spun it. So, it, you know, the speculators were kind of put to the back burner, and it was a supply-demand story. The word spun came up about 4 or 5 times in that conversation. No kidding. I was absolutely, I was mystified. Why would somebody say that they spun the data? And by the way, if they're spinning the data then, are they spinning the data now? But crude finished about almost $70. Is this a point to start shorting it? That's an interesting question. Major resistance at 70. I think we hit 73 once before, last month or so, and it dropped right back down. Dropped down towards like 60. The couple things you need to know. We talked about this. Gasoline inventories are pretty high. Diesel inventories are at record highs. Distillates have been growing. And now, instead of a $1.5 million drawdown of on inventory of oil, we saw over a $5 million overall gain. I mean, that's just, you know, the inventories are growing dramatically. So what is driving oil? What is driving oil that's not driving natural gas? What's driving gasoline prices? We hit about 3% higher towards the end of the week after they dropped down a little bit. This is going to hurt us at the pump. This is a big issue. I think that's something we really need to be concerned about. Well, let's talk about a couple other things really quickly. A couple of stocks we've been looking at right now. We wrote a story on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and actually, I think that actually, before we do that, I just want to kind of finish up something, actually. I have a paper on my desk here that I'm looking at. I think that one of the things that's really interesting to look at, when we look at the personal consumption numbers that came out at, you know, with the GDP numbers, was that when we look at on a quarterly basis, again, we saw a non-durable personal consumption dropped about 2.5%. Durables dropped 7% on a quarter-over-quarter basis. Motor vehicles were dropped also. With motor vehicle numbers dropped, furniture's dropped, and overall durables dropped, as I mentioned. There really wasn't that many bright spots in here. They were better, but not a lot of bright spots in that GDP. The debt load on GDP is going to be just a huge problem. You know, when we look at how much debt we've accumulated here in the United States to pay for all the issues that happened in the banking industry, et cetera, really just a wild, wild situation. All right, so let's get into a couple of stocks that we talked about. One of them we talked about, a bit of a risky stock, an interesting play, is Mercado Libre. This is the eBay of Latin America. Started out in Brazil originally and spread out dramatically. Looking for about 11 cents per share next quarter, about $39 million overall on earnings. If you want to check out the details of that, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a link right there. It tells you all about the stock, things that we're looking at there. We also like some of these solar companies. First Solar came out with just a dramatic beat on earnings. FSLR is one of the is the symbol. Trina Solar, Yingling Solar, energy conversion devices. We've talked about those before. We bought them a while ago. We have some decent gains on those, generally speaking. For anybody, we bought those for about, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. They dropped down pretty big time when the earnings came out. First Solar went from about 175 to about 190, I think, after hours or something for just a second, and then drop back the next day. There's a concern about the cost of the silicone wafers and the cost of actually, you know, driving them down, and the fact that First Solar has a bit of an inventory, a build. They have the inventory build, you know, because they've been putting, you know, doing a lot of output because demand has been pretty good, but there's still a little bit of a, I guess, a holdover there. And if we have inventory build and we have lower costs, the inventory they have is going to be more expensive and they're going to lose money on that. That's the theory. But at the same time, their margins are increasing, just like what happened with a company that we saw last week in the educational area. We saw ESI, ITT, come out with earnings, and actually they were pretty darn good. But you know what? There was a small build, about a 3 to a 5% build for bad loans. We know about that. But at the same time, they had a 5% increase in margin. Their margin increased by 5%. That's good. That can right there pay for the loan, you know, that they put aside. But they dropped the stock down a little bit and then started to pull up. We like the educational stocks. We think in an environment that we have over 6 million people that are unemployed, the secondary and private education, DeVry, Apollo, ESI, there's a few others, Coco, Seco. But those three names I mentioned, we really think can do some great numbers. And actually, they're a great hedge. Oftentimes, when you see the market up, they're down. When the market's down, they're up. It's kind of like a, I don't know, it kind of works a little bit opposite. But generally speaking, these firms are doing really well. If they can clean up their loan issue, I think they're going to do really well. So I mentioned a lot of stocks to you today. We talked about the Cash for Clunkers, a few of those that we like. We have a post on Cash for Clunkers. Just do a search. Go to disciplinedinvestor.com and do a search for Cash for Clunkers. You'll see some things on that. We have a few stories we're going to release about some new stocks that are involved in the Cash for Clunkers. The question is, will they continue that bill? If they do, wow, we could see some real numbers here. And again, that would be, I think, rather stimulative. The other thing that I guess is beckoning our discussion is the dollar, the U.S. dollar, all over the place. I mean, took a big run up last week against the euro and then dropped back down. Again, the dollar dropping is not good for the oil prices, or in other words, oil prices go up, and we don't want to see higher oil prices generally. But you know what? The question will be is, you know, will the dollar become a safe haven again if the markets and the people get a little concerned if the recovery doesn't take hold? You know, if we see a situation where we see GDP getting better and possibly moving out of a recession, the dollar is probably going to weaken because people will take their money and move to another trade. I don't know if that's necessarily going to hold for long. If you look at the dollar right now, it's been bottoming and basing out pretty well and bouncing along its general bottom and its support range. I think that the dollar probably will start to strengthen a little bit for a lot of different reasons. If, in fact, we could stop spending money like drunken sailors. You know, if we do the Cash for Clunkers, another $2, $3 billion for that, that's a problem. If we keep bailing out banks, that's a problem. If we keep on spending and racking up this major deficit, and if we spend $1 trillion over the next couple of years, or $1.5 trillion or more, it's always going to be more, on the health insurance initiative, even though that's necessary, I understand, we have to come up with a better solution here than just spending taxpayer money, because that's just not going to work, and that's not going to help the dollar. It doesn't help the dollar. It doesn't help oil. It doesn't help oil. It doesn't help us. And it's a gigantic loop that is just not good for us. So I think that, you know, when you look at what's happened, July was an unbelievable month. Let's talk about what happened with July. Oh, man. The first 2 weeks of July looked awful. I mean, absolutely awful. What we saw was the S&P 500. We always talk about that. The S&P 500 bouncing along this 875, 877 number. It would bounce. It would come up. It would bounce. It would come up. And then it came up. We had Meredith Whitney on that Monday say, oh, Goldman Sachs is good. Okay, everybody in the pool, you know, kind of everybody run. Big penguin dive. And, you know, if you were short, you got hurt. We got spun around that day pretty hard. You know, when I say hard, we kind of like took out our shorts and went to a long position a couple days later when we saw that it was actually taking hold. But wow, with the Intel numbers and all that, we saw from about a 5% or so downstroke in a matter of weeks to about a 7% uptick on the S&P 500, Dow, and the NASDAQ. Starting to peter out a little bit towards the end of the week last week. But at the same time, you know, you really think about what happened there, it almost feels and looks just like what happened in March. You can't be too short here. You can't be going into this. You know, I'd rather have a couple of short positions that you have some confidence in. If they don't work out, cut them fast. Take your long positions right now, your best positions, your best ideas. Let them run for a while. If they move down on you, look for those bounce points. Look for the bounce points. Because usually what's been happening right now, there's a great appetite four stocks at this moment. A lot of people ask me, Andrew, you're so bullish. We're not bullish. We think the market is broken still. But there are great opportunities in individual positions and in areas around the world. We have a position in the BIC, B-I-C, not BRIC. We don't like Russia. Russia's all over the place. 6% down here, 5% down there, 3% up, 8% up. Close the market for 2 days. I don't like a market or a country that's going to close their markets. That is not something I want to invest in. Even though they may do extremely well if oil comes up here, I do not want to have anything to do with a company, but a stock, or a country that closes their stock market. That is more than broken. That's a mess. So what we do like is Brazil, at least right now. There's some political problems there. Boy, we read a great article this week about how Brazil cut a deal with China for $10 billion. They're going to provide them, I think, 100,000 barrels a day. I think that was the number. For the next 10 years, guaranteed. It's like China just bought, basically just bought a third of the price for oil, guaranteed. That was a good deal, barter deal. That's why they're doing currency swaps as well. We like India. The population expanse there is just dramatic. Now, there again, they have some political problems there. There's elections coming and things and all sorts of, you know, oddities going on there. But we like it. And we like generally like China. Now, again, all of these are going to be basically what I see as growth stories over the next 10 years. Now, we'll hold them until we see the markets break. If they do break, we saw China take a big whack the other night, last week, of a 5% reduction in one night. It was down as much as 7%. I mean, that's not even funny. I mean, 7% in one night, and then it bounced back up. But, boy, that is not funny. That's like a crash. I mean, yeah, it's not a 20% in one night, but, you know, what is that a sign of? Got to be careful about that. There's a lot of people that are saying these days that China is just overdone, manipulated, and government stuffed. The government was hinting around that they may pull the stimulus package. They may start slowing it down. They did say that they're going to put a clamp down on some of the loans because the loans are getting out of control. They're getting a speculative housing bubble there like we saw recently, and that doesn't last too long. We know that. Everybody's euphoric about it for a while, but then, boy, it hurts on the way down. So China, certain areas of China, has some political issues, has some questionable bubble and speculative issues there. But I think that, you know, when we talk about the expansion of that, three new coal plants on a daily basis, 150,000 miles of highways have already been built. They know how to do a stimulus package over there. Here, we're talking about 70% of our stimulus package is going to be spent by 2012. What happened to 2010? What happened to 2011? Well, let me get this straight. This great stimulus package that is meant to save or create the line. You gotta investigate what that line says. To create or save 4 million jobs, start at 2.5 million, then 3.5 million, and 4 million. To create or save 4 million jobs. Now, here's the thing about that. Here's what really aggravates me about that one line. It's rhetoric. It's BS. Why? You can't quantify how many jobs you would have saved. Right now, they could say, we're victorious. There would have been 4 million more jobs lost if we didn't institute this particular stimulus package. We don't know that answer. There's no way to quantify that. So that was a great little line to put after that. I mean, and did you notice every single time it was said, the stimulus package is to make, to save 4 million jobs? No, they didn't say that. It's to create or save. It didn't say create alone. It didn't say create or save outs in every direction. Beautifully done. So I think that, you know, when we look about back to this W here for a second, I think that we have a bit of a, as Muhammad Al-Aryan from PIMCO Fund said, we're a little bit on a sugar high right now. That's not necessarily bad. Sugar highs can last a long time. Okay, remember back when you were a kid, right? Remember back yesterday maybe? I don't know. But sugar highs can last a long time. And that doesn't mean that the markets have to crack right now. Again, that doesn't mean that they're not going to either. I'm just going to, you know, I'm hedging right here. I am not giving you a prediction right here. Markets look like they want to go up. There seems to be money being poured in. And you know what? You got to find the right positions to invest in. You can go broad-based if you want, but be careful because when they turn, if they turn, if we have this W, it could be a little bit tough. A lot of disappointment in what happened last year and people kind of pulled. Will we see that kind of number again? I mean, a lot of that was due to the forced liquidations of the hedge funds, I think. I talked to my friend John Markman recently, and that's what we talked about. You know, what happened in March? What happened last October? The question is, when are we going to see those doors open again? If people get concerned about their money and they have to pull out and there's a forced liquidation. You know, who knows what kind of Bernie Madoff situation we have around the corner. That's not even resolved yet. Those poor people never got their money. I mean, just horrible. But right now, for the moment, it looks like, you know, the markets want to at least be stable somewhat. Do we have another 15% day or a week or a month to go down? I mean, it's possible. It's definitely possible. I mean, it's more than possible. There's a reality there. But, you know, at this point, again, I think that it's what's really interesting about that is that there is this, you know, general desire of people to invest and risk return has returned dramatically. I think that what's going to end up happening is, yes, it will lead us to another bubble here. But we'll wait till about, I don't know, maybe we'll get to the 1060 at the Goldman number, 1100 on the total number. We're not that far away. Listen, it's almost close to breaking 1,000 on the S&P 500. We went up and went through and then back down on 2,000 on the NASDAQ. Now, that's everybody's excited. The NASDAQ, woo! The NASDAQ is still down 50, 60% from its high back in 2000 and change, right? Remember that? I mean, what was the high back then? Was it 7,000? No, it was 4,500. I got to look at that. You know, it's years ago, right? It's a decade ago, and it's, boy, is it a lot of highs and lows between. But you know what? I think that when we look at all these numbers, I think, you look at the management discussions, a lot of management they're very optimistic right now. They think that the worst is behind us, and I think that we have to kind of pay attention to that. So that doesn't mean we have to, you know, believe it without any kind of consequence because, you know, at the same time, managers are always going to say things are looking better, and that's what's going on right now. Anyway, I thought I'd end on that. We want to have a news show this time, kind of talk about some of the things that are going on. You know, if you want to get in touch with me, just write me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com, or if you want... If you want to check out how we do our things, a lot of people always ask me, hey, Andrew, what do you, you know, they write me, Andrew, where do we go? What do we do? Just go to the website. We'll put a link in there to check out the 14-minute virtual tour. If you want to invest in us, with us, it's a $50,000 minimum. You see how we trade, what we do, how things are going, you know, what the things that we like. If you like the things that we talk about here, that's where you go to get our services. It's very simple. Just check it out. It's a 14-minute virtual tour. I narrate it. I tell you what's going on. We're going to actually change that soon because it's a little bit old. We kind of put that together a few months ago, and it goes back a little bit further than we want. We need to refresh that a little bit. But anyway, with that in mind, this is Andrew Horowitz, and you are listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Please go check out the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I will see you next week when we have a brand new guest coming on that I think you'll really enjoy. Have a great weekend. Have a great end of the summer. Relax. Have a beer. Have a vodka. Have a cigar. Have something. It's a great time. It's a great time, and I think that we have great opportunity ahead of us on both sides of the equation, both up and down, and I think that we make the most of it right now. Get out of the funk, get out of the depression that a lot of people are in. A lot of people are moping around saying how awful it is. It is, but you know what? Let's make the best of it. Andrew Horowitz, we'll see you real soon on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.